The Natural Resources Access Regulator is marking its first year by increasing the number of boots on the ground and also increasing water investigation rates. NRAR's Chief Regulatory Officer Grant Barnes says the community confidence in their work means they've received about 4,000 hotline calls and emails, and their compliance outcomes have seen 70% more cases received for investigation and about five times as many allegations of unlawful water take. Those issues have been received by the office. I spoke to Grant Barnes a short time ago.
We're pretty proud of our achievements in the first year of our operation as an independent regulator of water in New South Wales. Resolving nearly 500 cases that we inherited is just one measure of our achievement. We're also very pleased that we've been able to re-establish a visible presence with boots on the ground throughout the state and continue to find landholders and water users who are grateful for our presence and welcoming us on farm. And I think that goes really to the one major benefit of having an independent regulator is that the vast majority of water users who do understand their obligations and comply with the law know that having NRAR on farm is a test to that compliance, and they're able to say, we've had NRAR out here, they've checked our operations, and they say we're all good to go. And that's important for social licence.
Well, I mean, the fact that you've been able to draw a line through so many cases, does that mean that they were slack before and they weren't quickly going through them, or are you a bit softer on them now?
What it means for us is the setting NRAR up, we've been able to establish over 60 frontline officers. We have the capacity now to deal with these cases, but importantly, we also have the capability with skilled and experienced officers who understand regulatory practice and understand how to plan a case, how to conduct a case, and how to resolve a case. It's not surprising, given how complex water regulation is, that many of the allegations turn out to be not and are compliant with the law. It's also not surprising, and this is the experience of many regulators outside of water, that where non-compliance is found, it tends to skew to minor non-compliance. Now, for us, that's seen the issuance of advisory letters or formal warnings. Now, we've done that in over half the situations where we have taken compliance action. But like any modern best practice regulator, it's appropriate that we apply sanctive powers where it is appropriate. And so we've done that with the issuance of statutory notices, with penalty infringement notices, and most importantly, Michael, we've taken 9 prosecutions so far in court, which have resulted in 3 guilty verdicts.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. So how many notices have you got sent out that were breach notices? Because famously, of course, it was mentioned in Parliament about previous regulators where there were only a couple of notices sent out in a 12-month period. But you seem to have sent out a lot more than that.
So in concluding our investigations, we've issued approximately 326 advisory or
so. That's a lot more than letters. two than the previous.
That would be my math, two. Now, these advisory letters are issued where minor non-compliance is encountered, and it's simply a record of our visit on farm, and it would note what we've found, and it would be stating clearly what's required for the landholder or water user to get back into compliance.
So do they involve fines as well, or remediation action?
So these are advice notes. They are polite requests. They're appropriate for minor non-compliance, and in most situations, the landholder and water user takes that advisory notice and makes the necessary steps to get into non-compliance. There are some instances where it hasn't resulted in that action, and we've then issued statutory directions, or in some cases have followed up with a penalty infringement notice.
So are those sorts of things, you know, illegal levee banks or holding water on farm that shouldn't be held by certain engineering, that sort of thing? Or is that at the higher level?
That would tend to skew to the higher level. There are, though, matters like that that we encounter. Look, when we're on farm and we've made an assessment, there are a number of factors that we consider that determine what compliance action that we would take. First one is to understand the harm that's been caused or the risk of harm. Second thing we look at is culpability. Was the landholder or water user aware that their actions were in breach of the law? We also consider public interest. And finally, when we're on farm, we evaluate attitude to compliance. Now, in most situations, what we're encountering is the harm is low, the conduct or the attitude of compliance is agreeable, and the public interest is low. In those instances, that's why it's resulted in advisory notices being issued. But in contrast to that, where the harm on the environment or to downstream users and communities is found to be high, where culpability is high, where public interest is high, and where the attitude of compliance is poor, we've taken prosecutions.
So that you say that you've got 9 prosecutions, so 6 of those still running, 3 guilty pleas. What sort of gambit are we looking at? What sort of parts of the state are we looking at?
So we have actions throughout the state, north, south, east and west. Those guilty pleas, one was up in Moree, the other two have been down in the Murray. The cases that we have before the Land and Environment Court, some result to the Four Corners program of July 2017 and others are unrelated. The 9 prosecutions that have we've commenced, there's likely to be more to follow in the coming months as we work through our caseload.
So there's a number in the south as well. See, everyone sort of says, oh, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the north and northern basin and, you know, and it's targeting cotton growers, but that doesn't seem to be the case. There's non-compliance going on in the south as well.
So we get allegations of non-compliance throughout the state, whether it's on the eastern seaboard or out into the west. And when we conduct investigations throughout these parts, there's nothing that we see that distinguishes one part of the state from another. We're a regulator who has oversight across all parts of the state and are pretty busy, whether it's north, south, east or west.
Now, the other issue we've heard recently, famously yesterday, there was this announcement that a group of several cotton families are offering to sell their water. They're saying part of the reason is the attention that they've been getting for being cotton growers in the Northern Basin, and they're saying, okay, well, we're willing to sell our water to willing buyers, and you can put that water into back into the environment or into another business, irrigation business, and we'll stop growing cotton. And the implication's been made by a number of people that that they feel as though their social license to grow cotton in the Northern Basin has been eroded. Is it because of action or increased action by groups like yours, like NRAR or the government, more scrutiny that's forced people to feel a bit nervous about their activities?
Look, I think what the actions of NRAR shows, and we demonstrate that through our compliance actions, is that the vast majority of water users, and I include the cotton industry in that statement, understand their obligations and comply with the law. It is only a few where we've taken the necessary action, and it's unfortunate that the action allegedly of a few have maligned the good work and the honest intentions of most of the industry.
You mentioned social license in your in your activities as well. So you actually feel as though you're actually allowing irrigators that are doing the right thing to continue on?
Look, I think that's part of what I would describe as social license, an acknowledgement that a water user or landholder is complying with the law. But it's also important that if people are accessing a social license, it's not simply just that they comply with the law. What I would be expecting in a social license situation are those that voluntarily go above what the law requires. And there's many water users and landholders who do that, do so voluntarily.
So the work's not over yet.
No, it's not, Michael. We're happy with the achievements of the first year, but we are really just getting started. Part of our attention going forward is building proactive campaigns. We're out ahead of reactive non-compliance. And what I mean by that is work that we've recently done in the Coffs Harbour area, focusing on intensive agriculture, or work underway in the Hawkesbury at the moment. We're proactively auditing water users. There's more of this to come as we exercise our capability in proactive monitoring and auditing. But we also know the second tranche of the metering regulations come into effect in the 1st of December, and there's an important role of NRAR to ensure that water users who are required to upgrade their meters and install telemetry are doing so by the deadline. And look, Michael, we'll continue to meet the challenge of protecting precious water users in this time of drought. It's important that we as a regulator understand that every drop of water counts, and we have a role to ensure that it gets to its intended use.
That's NRAR's Chief Regulatory Officer, Grant Barnes.